WBZ H910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Hezbollah launched dozens of missiles toward Israel early today, including one aimed at Tel Aviv. The militant group saying its deepest strike into Israel yet was targeting the Mossad, which is Israel's equivalent of the CIA. Secretary of State Antony Blinken telling ABC News this morning.
You've got a group in Hezbollah that's a designated terrorist organization. Back in 2000, Israel got out of southern Lebanon, which it had been occupying. All of these groups, including Hezbollah, were supposed to put down their weapons. Hezbollah didn't do it.
He says they continue working on a diplomatic solution to the fighting. For the first time in decades, China has fired an intercontinental ballistic missile. It was carrying a dummy warhead, and it landed in the Pacific. China claims it was part of a routine annual training exercise, but it hasn't fired an ICBM since 1980. Tropical storm Helene gaining strength as it moves through the Gulf of Mexico. More than 60 of Florida's coastal counties are now under a state of emergency. This is ABC News. Out this morning, a new report highlighting the security failures around the attempt on the life of former President Donald Trump at a rally this summer. ABC's Jim Ryan has more on the findings from the Senate Homeland Security Committee.
The committee finds fault with the Secret Service planning before the Trump rally in Butler, Pennsylvania, and with the agency's lack of effective communication with other police agencies that day. Thomas Crooks was able to get off 8 shots before he was killed by snipers. One of them struck Trump in the right ear.
This comes after new charges against the man accused of pointing a gun toward the former president at his Florida golf course. Ryan Ruth has been indicted now on attempted assassination charges. Worries about the eyesight of children. A new study in the British Journal of Ophthalmology says short-sightedness among kids tripled from 1990 to 2023 to 1 in 3 kids worldwide. Researchers think COVID lockdowns may have played a little part, with kids spending more time on screens, less time outside. Sherry Preston, ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
Most people out here think that taking care of one another is important. And most people would step up for a neighbor going through a tough time. Most people around here help out friends and family when they need it. But the funny thing is, most of us won't look for help when we need it. Talk to someone if you're struggling with mental health, because most people out here really care. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
I noticed when you buy toilets, they all have like these snazzy names. The Ambassador. Toilets do not do any kind of ambassadorship. This is for people who take huge dumps, this model.
The Ultimax.
The Ultimax. Why would you name a toilet that? Just a serial number is fine.
Every single toilet should be called the King's Throne. That's it.
Works. It's a lot easier.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The Wisconsin State Law Library will have a new name. The state's high court and the director of state courts announced it'll be dedicated to Lavinia Goodell. She was Wisconsin's first woman to become a lawyer. In 1874, she overcame barriers to practice law and worked to open the doors to other women. Currently, the library is named after former conservative justice David Prosser. That was a controversial move in 2016, in part because Prosser put his hands on the neck of a fellow female justice and claimed self-defense. He was recommended to be found guilty of ethics violations, but justices recused themselves, so the charges went nowhere. Brett Favre revealed Tuesday that he has been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. The revelation came while Favre was testifying in front of Congress over a controversy that started in 2020, where he was accused of misusing funds intended to help low-income families. And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz, and this is Civic Media News.
A potential playoff preview looms this week. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cuska with Sports, filling in for Mike Lemons. The Milwaukee Brewers are all but locked into the third seed in next month's MLB playoffs. The NL Central champions beat Pittsburgh yesterday 7-2. The Brewers will play the Pirates again this evening. This weekend, Milwaukee takes on the New York Mets in what could be a playoff matchup. Green Bay has won 2 in a row with backup quarterback Malik Willis at the helm. Coach Matt LaFleur said Willis has picked up the offense quickly.
I just cannot articulate the job that he's done in the short period of time.
people can't fathom it. I promise you. You guys don't get it. I know you think you got it, but you don't get it. What he's been able to do is I've never seen something like this.
Starting quarterback Jordan Love, who practiced all of last week, has missed two games with an MCL sprain, but could return this week. Kickoff against the Minnesota Vikings is at noon on Sunday. And former Packers quarterback Brett Favre said during a congressional hearing on welfare reform Tuesday that he has Parkinson's disease. Filling in for Mike Clemens, I'm Jimmy Cuska with Civic Media Sports.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
It is going to feel a lot more like summer than fall here for the next several days. Today, sunshine with a light westerly breeze, our high 74 this afternoon. Tonight, clear with a low of 48. Tomorrow, sunny, 78. Friday, sunshine with a high of 78. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 42.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I'm joined by legendary performer Charo, Jesse March from the Festival Theater in St. Croix, and King of Queens writer, executive producer Rock Rubin joins to discuss the show's legacy.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back to Up North News Radio, unabashedly Wisconsin, brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's 7:06. Nice to have you here up north. On this Wednesday morning, September 25th, 2024, in case we want to answer a little trivia question from the last hour when we were doing our history lesson, and you probably heard a little song near the end of it. Greg, can you remind us what was that song we were hearing? There it is.
Hello world, hear the song.
The one thing we didn't have time for, that on this day in 1970, the Partridge Family debuted on ABC. I think of how many families decided to try to become musical groups after that with, shall we say, varying levels of success. Something like that. I'm sorry, Greg, looked like you were going to jump in.
I was going to say, and then many, many families never spoke again.
Yes, exactly like that. Meteorologist Brittany Merlot is here. Up North News reporter Elizabeth Montemurl will be joining us in a moment as well. But first, since we're up here at the top of the hour, why don't we try to make you a winner in the Go for the Green or Gold Text to Win contest, something we do four times a day in the 7 a.m. hour, 11 a.m., 1 p.m., and 4 p.m. Each of those times, we give you a different keyword to text us on the Civic Media app. We pick one of those entries at random statewide, and the winner gets $100 or gold jewelry, depending on what's up for grabs that hour. All of the entries are up for the grand prize, a pair of indoor tickets to see the Green and Gold in Green Bay on Monday, December 23rd against New Orleans. Again, you have until the end of the hour to text in this hour's keyword, and this hour's keyword is radio. Radio, R-A-D-I-O. Text that in for a chance to win $100 for one lucky winner this hour. And again, we'll remind you of the word later this hour, but just to save yourself, text it in right now on that Civic Media app. Brittany, how are things looking weather-wise for this Wednesday? It's starting off really nice up here in Chippewa Falls. Temperatures, I actually have bus stop weather for us here. There we go. It's 53 here in Chippewa, 42 in Hayward, 41 in Park Falls, Wausau 46, Green Bay 51 right now, La Crosse 53. It's 45 in Rapids, 52 in Oshkosh, 48 in Madison, and Greg's sitting on a comfortable 54 degrees there in Waukesha. So where do we go from here?
Oh, only up, up, up. We're going to get warmer than yesterday. We have a ton of sunshine on tap once again, and we're actually going to be hitting those mid-70s across the entire state. A gorgeous one, but we still have to get through that dense fog that is still lingering into northern Wisconsin here this morning. There's a dense fog advisory in effect until 9 o'clock for Douglas and Bayfield counties, but that fog is stretching all the way into Eau Claire, Wisconsin Rapids, and the Eagle River area as well. So take it easy this morning and enjoy the sunshine this afternoon. We're going to get even warmer as we cruise into the rest of this week and the weekend. Actually, it's going to be unseasonable warmth, of course, as we track that hurricane that is pushing towards Florida. That's going to head our way as we go towards this weekend, bringing more clouds, maybe some rainfall, too.
It hasn't reached hurricane status yet, though. And if it does,
no.
Helene is the next name up.
So yep. It's a tropical storm right now, and it's expected to maybe be a hurricane later today.
Okay, so that could be a next little rainmaker for us here. So if you're going to get your lawns mowed, get them mowed soon here. Robin Tigerton says, good morning, clear in 46. I got a new timing belt for my car today and then mowing jobs in the Tigerton area. Aaron's in Shawano, and we were talking about one-hit wonders in our last segment, and he remembers the Starland Vocal Band back in 1976 with Afternoon Delight. So... Rob's got one. We all have a favorite one-hit wonder that's out there. But I appreciated him talking about it. I haven't heard about a timing belt on a car since, you know, my first car was a 73 Plymouth Fury. And, I mean, everything fell off of that at some point or another. Timing belts, all that. Brittany, what'd you have for a first car?
Oh, my gosh. My first car was a Chevy Lumina.
A Lumina. Oh, okay.
Party.
I'm a long way now.
Yeah.
Right? You get what you can get for your first car.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. Mine came from a junkyard. My dad thought it was a good bargain a couple of years, like when I was 14, and he told the guy, "Here, I'm gonna pay you. Just keep it there." And it just sat in the sun, you know, for 2 years. And so the dashboard had this giant crack in it from the sun, you know, being outside for 2 years like that. But you know, it's a free car. I'm gonna take it. Greg, what was your first vehicle?
1984 Dodge Omni hand-me-down from my sister.
A Dodge Omni. Boy, these are some obscure ones here.
Did you think a Gremlin was embarrassing? Get into a Dodge Omni.
Yeah. Elizabeth Montmorel's here, too, as well. Elizabeth, what was your first vehicle?
I drove my uncle's 1990 Buick Regal in high school.
A Buick. There we go. Very nice. I love it.
Sporty. Only had two doors, so.
I do. I love first car stories and what all could, you know, could go wrong with them. What is Robin Tigerton saying? A 77 Chevy Nova. Oh, my gosh. The Nova. That my mom didn't learn to drive till she was like 30. And so as kids... the first car that we were in for her was a Ford Granada, a 76 Ford Granada. We could make an hour just of obscure car model names that you don't have anymore. Because now they just give them like letters and numbers like the Q35 or the A15. Like,
that makes them fancy, Pat.
Yeah, you can charge more for all of that. Yeah. All right. Thanks for story, Brittany. Appreciate it. Have a wonderful
day. You too.
All right. Hey, a reminder, you can sign up for our Unabashedly Wisconsin newsletter. Over at our website, upnorthnewswi.com, click subscribe in the banner of the homepage. There is a link there to the story that was first published on our website last week, where I wrote about the ways that Eric Hovde's finances did really well with the Trump 2017 tax bill and what it would mean if he's in the U.S. Senate and in a position to determine whether future tax breaks again go to the very wealthy or would go to the middle class. So that and much more, click subscribe at the top of the homepage or click support at the top of the homepage if you'd like to make a contribution during our quarterly fundraising drive. That's always appreciated as well. So my Up North News colleague Elizabeth Montemurro is here. And as we've been talking about the presidential campaign, we asked you to do a little work into former President Trump's insistence on once again having a trade policy based on conflict and tariffs and these claims that, you know, it's going to raise all this money. And, you know, Elizabeth, your report makes clear we've been to this rodeo already.
We have. You know, have the benefit of having had Donald Trump as president before and seeing what he did in his first term. And in 2018, he actually raised tariffs. And it didn't necessarily work out so well.
No, and it feels like he hasn't learned from that. Let's give a look. We've got one quick soundbite here from Trump talking about tariffs.
We're doing tariffs on other countries. Other countries are going to finally, after 75 years, pay us back for all that we've done for the world. And the tariff will be substantial in some cases. I took in billions and billions of dollars, as you know, from China. Who's going to have higher prices is China and all of the countries that have been ripping us off for years.
But, Elizabeth, it doesn't work that way. And I mean, I like the example that you gave in a report you're working on. Let's just consider the avocado, shall we?
Yes. And ironically, I don't know why I picked to use an avocado as an example, because I no longer eat them after I had an unfortunate hand incident cutting one. But basically what could happen under this proposal when you raise tariffs, if your local grocery store, your Pick and Save, your Piggly Wiggly wants to import avocados, because we don't grow them in Wisconsin, especially in winter, mm-hmm. The grocer is going to have to pay more money to import that avocado if you want it for Taco Tuesday in January. That price increase usually gets passed along to you at the grocery store checkout. So it's not that China or Mexico is going to be paying more. We could actually see higher prices at the checkout line.
Yeah. I mean, it's something as small as an avocado, or something as big as a new electric vehicle, which Trump likes to talk about a lot. He talked about, you know, imposing, you know, a tariff on, you know, John Deere for lawn equipment that they might make in other countries and bring in here. But again, while yes, there's a tariff charged, that just means that the importer, the grocery chain, the food wholesaler, whatever, well, then they get charged for it. So they've got to make it up. So then they pass that price on to the consumer. So the consumer has to make it up, which is all to say, it sounds a bit like a national sales tax.
I think it does, Pat.
Well, because again, we end up being the ones that have to pay the price. Now, like you said, we learned this firsthand. Wisconsin farmers learned it firsthand, and then Wisconsin taxpayers, learned about it secondhand. Can you tell us a bit about the experience with trade war with China back in 2018?
Yeah, when Trump raised tariffs in 2018, it actually ended up setting off a little bit of a trade war with China, and then other countries had some trickle out trade wars going on with the U.S. And what ended up happening in the middle of that trade war was prices slowly crept up. It actually helped, from my research, I found that it actually helped to create a small number of manufacturing jobs in, say, like Pennsylvania and steel country. But we lost jobs and we lost trade income in other areas. And that actually ended up having a trickle-down effect, so that Wisconsin farmers felt the effects. So any money that we actually ended up making from that increase in tariffs on certain countries, we had to make up for in other areas. And what it resulted in is Trump bailing out Wisconsin farmers, well, really farmers across the country, but to a tune of $28
billion. $28
billion
is what it actually cost taxpayers in payments to farmers to make up for the loss of markets because they couldn't export their goods to China and other places that got caught up in the trade war as well. So again, when you hear tariffs, you really just need to think taxes, because it's going to be a sales tax on all of us. Elizabeth Montemurro, thank you very much for the explainer on that. Have a wonderful day. Thanks for telling us about your first car, and we'll talk to you a little bit later on.
Thanks. Have a good one.
All right. We'll continue to unpack the headlines, and then we'll talk about Alma Center Humbert, Maryland's proposal for a daycare center at school coming up next. You're up north.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matt Nair on Air.
I don't know about other states, but in Wisconsin, we help our neighbors and love our communities. But California mega millionaire Eric Hovde doesn't seem to get that. Maybe that's why he questioned whether children should be able to stay on their parents' insurance until they're 26. And whether people in nursing homes should be able to vote. Hovde called for raising the retirement age for hardworking Wisconsinites and making obese people pay more for health care. And a Hovde company even spent decades trying to demolish the building housing Madison's oldest family-owned bar, something they finally did this year, shuttering a treasured neighborhood institution for good. That is not how we do things in Wisconsin. And that is why we can't let California mega millionaire Eric Hovde represent us. Paid for by a Better Wisconsin Together Action. ABWT-action.org. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
As a federally licensed broadcast company, this civic media station is required by FCC regulations to accept advertising by all qualified candidates for federal office. We also accept ads from state and local candidates. We do screen announcements from issue groups and PACs and exercise discretion in airing announcements with blatantly false claims or outrageous unfounded statements. These announcements do not necessarily reflect the views of civic media, its hosts, or advertisers, and the source of all issue announcements can be found online at our FCC public file.
Here's to celebrating everyone's favorite time of year in Wisconsin with all our arty, fun-loving, foodie, feasting fall events. There's Kohler Food and Wine, Aaron's Art on Wheels at Road America, Red Cliff Cultural Days, Holy Hill Art and Craft Fair, and the Fests, Wassa's Ginseng Fest, Warren's Cranberry Fest, Bayfield Apple Fest, Milwaukee Film Fest. Whew, there's a whole lot of fall fun to be had in Wisconsin. Find more events at TravelWisconsin.com. Sponsored by Travel Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
It's National One Hit Wonder Day. Norman Greenbaum is on the list with Spirit in the Sky. Again, you hear these things, and you're like, how did you not have at least one other thing that charted? And meanwhile, other people have, like, you know, song after song after song, and you go, well, they're okay. They're not great. But some artists just never seem to come up with that second hit. Greg, it's been one of the mysteries of my radio.
Well, it's, you know, the thing about one-hit wonders, there's two thoughts I have on this. First of all, this song alone defines so many soundtracks, TV shows, moments in people's lives, but also they have one more hit than I do.
Yeah, there is that.
I mean, that's how you view it. Like, people are like, oh, he's a one hit wonder. I'm like, how many hits do you have? You don't have any. I like love that. And we also live in a world where, I mean, is Norman Greenbaum still with us? I don't know.
I don't know.
Who knows? He could always have another hit. We look at actors have comebacks all the time. You never know. I hold hope.
You hold hope for Norman?
I hold hope for Norman.
Yeah. Hey, guess what? He's 81 years old and still with us.
There
so
we go.
It is quite possible.
There you go.
Well, there you go, Norman. You and George R. R. Martin trying to finish that book. Let's get a move on, guys. A book from you and a song from you, please. Reminder, the Go for the Green or Gold Text to Win contest. This hour's keyword is radio. Text it to us on the Civic Media app. Quick little note about it. You also receive a response message with an optional way to click on a webpage link to earn additional entries into the contest by completing certain activities, which sounds nefarious. It's actually quite harmless and fun. So I hope I've piqued your curiosity on that. And so take part in that contest, would you? Milwaukee Brewers notched a 7-2 win over the Pittsburgh Pirates last night. Willie Adames now has a 30-20 season, 32 home runs, and he stole his 20th base. Adames is also fourth in the major for ribbies with 111 runs batted in. And the Brewers, that's their 90th win of the year, 90 wins in consecutive seasons. They haven't done that since 1978, 1979. The Brewers play again at 5:40 this evening in Pittsburgh. The pregame's at 5:05 on WRCE in Richland Center, WRJN in Racine, WISS in Oshkosh, and WCQM in Park Falls. So again, Brewers baseball this evening, and then again tomorrow morning, 11:05, I think, is the pregame. 11:35 is first pitch as the Brewers wrap up their series tomorrow in Pittsburgh. All right, it is 7:24 right now, and I want to talk about Donald Trump being rejected on a possible trip to Madison. But how he and Republicans, there is a smart strategy behind this, and I'll explain. But first off, the rejection. The former president, or at least his campaign, apparently inquired about visiting the World Dairy Expo at some point when it runs from October 1st through the 4th. An expo spokesperson told the Isthmus in an email that the event organizers, quote, humbly declined the request in order to maintain a nonpartisan event. And that is well within their rights to do so. There's no reason if you are the private organizers of the World Dairy Expo and you don't want to have it become a politician spectacle, you don't have to do that. But here's the smart part about Republicans. They're going to target Dane County. The former president is going to be in Prairie du Chien on Saturday for what I would politely call a racially tinged appearance to once again talk about bashing immigrants based on recent events. But the campaign has told reporters that there will be some kind of appearance in Dane County. And I know what some of you are thinking, like, well, that's crazy. Dane County is growing and growing, and its Democratic margin is only growing and growing. Statewide races that go to Democrats or to progressive candidates, in many ways, you can say the growth of Dane County makes the difference. But here's the thing. Look at what's happening in the so-called WOW counties, Waukesha, Ozaukee, Washington County, around Milwaukee. They were so solidly Republican. And I'll never forget the first time that somebody told me this, and it makes perfect sense, but I never thought about it. And then the light bulb went off when they said, I was talking to whoever was the head of the Waukesha County Democratic Party at the time. And this person said, well, you know, Waukesha County actually has the third or the fourth highest number of Democratic voters out of all the counties. Which, again, makes perfect sense. Waukesha County is a very populous county, and they're not all Republicans. And they're not all the Democrats are in Milwaukee County and Dane County. And, yeah, there's some in Brown County and Eau Claire County and you know, Portage County. But there's a lot of people in Waukesha and a lot of Democrats. And so there continued to be pressure applied toward the state party, especially, to not ignore Waukesha County. And to make inroads because, again, in a statewide race, every vote counts wherever it comes from. So are you going to scrounge for one more Democratic vote in Madison, even though you feel like you've hit, you know, knocked on every door there over and over again? Or are you going to go to this place in Waukesha County where they're a little tougher to find, but they haven't been contacted? And so motivate them to turn out and vote. Let them know it's not a helpless cause and that they should just stay home. Well, Republicans are doing that now, looking at Dane County. They've talked about, you know, Milwaukee County. They've once or twice tried to open outreach offices. But, you know, then you had Bob Spindell on the Wisconsin Elections Commission basically, you know, bragging at one point about, you know, trying to discourage black voters in Milwaukee. And I'm sure the Milwaukee outreach will continue on some level. But they understand that Dane County is where there is so much growth right now. So they'd be crazy not to do more activity. So it won't be at the World Dairy Expo, but it will be someplace. And so that's where, again, it is a note of caution for Democrats and progressives to do absolutely nothing that makes you look like you're just coasting and saying, well, we've got so much, you know, of an advantage here that we can get complacent about Dane County. You really can't. You can't get complacent about any place in Wisconsin in a vote that's going to be razor thin almost assuredly. Every single voter is important in this state. Every vote matters. And that takes me back to you, dear listener. Your vote really matters. And if you want to vote early and get your absentee ballot or find out where to vote on election day, go to myvote.wi.gov and make the most of the valuable vote that you have. We're going to talk about schools and daycare centers next. You're up north.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
So the kids are on the bus off to school, driving past farm fields on the way. Believe it or not, they may be closer to agriculture in the classroom than you thought. I'm Pam Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news on a Wednesday. Sarah Stelter can tell you all about it. She's a soybean grower herself in Washera County, current president of the Wisconsin Soybean Association, also a director on the United Soybean Board. And she said they're creating new products all the time that end up in the classroom with the students.
Everything from crayons to shoes, if you like Skechers shoes in particular, the tires that maybe bus companies are using, many of the tires now have soybean oil in them, which actually helps the tires to conform to the roads in bad weather. The ink that is in a lot of pens is soy ink. Some of the products that are used in schools, being they carpeting or furniture, a lot of times soy oil is used in those products as well.
There you go. Students closer to Wisconsin agriculture than they might have thought. That's Sarah Stelter. She's a soybean grower from Washera County, also current president of the Wisconsin Soybean Association.
A voice for farmers, a vision for agriculture, Wisconsin Farm Bureau.
Wisconsin Farm Bureau is the trusted voice leading Wisconsin agriculture forward. Our voting members set policy that guides the organization on the local, state, and national level, with the ultimate goal of helping farmers like you and me back home. You can make a difference by becoming a member at WFEF.com.
A voice for farmers, a vision for agriculture, Wisconsin Farm Bureau.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
Farmers deal with a lot, including long days, stress, and fatigue. This is your reminder to take breaks, stretch, have a snack, and hydrate your body. Avoid farm accidents by keeping yourself healthy. Visit ruralmutual.com to learn how Rural Mutual supports Wisconsin farmers and prioritize safety on the farm.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
And speaking of those farm fields that school buses are driving by, the harvest is moving a little farther along. Latest update from the Wisconsin Ag Statistical Service said as of Sunday across the state, about 49% of our corn silage had already been harvested. Corn condition was called 64% good to excellent. That's up 1 percentage point in confidence. Soybeans, well, right now it looks like about 9% of our soybeans have been harvested. 62% of our Wisconsin potato crop is already in the bin, and fall tillage, about 6% complete. That's just a quick update on what's happening in food news on a Wednesday. More available anytime at MidwestFarmReport.com. Sign up for our daily e-newsletter. You won't miss a thing. I'm Pam Yonke.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
It is going to feel a lot more like summer than fall here for the next several days. Today, sunshine with a light westerly breeze, our high 74 this afternoon. Tonight, clear with a low of 48. Tomorrow, sunny, 78. Friday, sunshine with a high of 78. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 42.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Kamala Harris was so classy. What did you think of the debate? My friend and Milwaukee County Board Chairwoman Marcelia Nicholson.
As a woman of color, she ran a clinic on how to school a mediocre white man. And on the other end, you have Trump, who was angry and rattled and showed why he was unfit to be president.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Todd Albaugh.
Hey,
everybody, join us next time as we will be live from Los Angeles, California. That's right, Los Angeles, getting ready for the Badgers versus USC all the rest of this week. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
So be true to your school.
Just like 7:34 now on Up North News Radio. Time for our weekly homeroom segment, where we talk a bit about public education, its many benefits, its many challenges, and we've certainly spoken repeatedly about school referendums, and there will be so many more on the ballot this year. In fact, by the end of the year, between February, April, I think there were some on the ballot in August, and again in November, nearly half of the school districts in the state will have gone to referendum to ask voters, basically, could you raise your own taxes, please, because of, and then it's a little bit different in every district. It, by and large, comes down to a state funding formula that is 30-plus years old and is way overdue to be overhauled. And so it's really more of a matter to talk to your state legislator or legislative candidate about. But because the system is broken the way it is, school districts are all the time looking for help with a couple of different things. One deals with new projects. You know, maybe a school needs to be rebuilt or add a school or modernized or a new furnace or, you know, something like that. But there's increasingly these operating referendums as well. There's no brick and mortar here. It's, hey, the limits imposed on us by the legislature aren't keeping up with inflation. And so just to maintain current services, we need to ask you, the local property taxpayer, to chip in because the legislature isn't. Would you do that for us, please? That's called an operating referendum. And when voters, if they say no to that in a school district, well, that often leads to cuts in services and jobs and things like that. Well, in the Lincoln School District, Alma Center, Humbert, Maryland, they're looking at both of these challenges, but they're also taking on a very unique way of addressing one of the challenges, and that deals with childcare. And childcare is increasingly an issue everywhere, of course, but even more so perhaps in rural communities. And it's an approach that I thought was worth a little extra conversation. So Drew Semmingson, the superintendent for Alma Center, Humbert, Maryland, joins us now to talk about their referendums and a unique project that they are proposing. Drew Semmingson, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's great to have you here. Thank you for being a leader in your district and for speaking out about what current needs are. So I want to get to the creative part first, and that deals with childcare. And more school districts, as Selena Heller has reported for us, are looking at potentially adding a childcare option to help the families in their community. And that's something you folks have decided to look into as well. Can you give me a little background first on why you've decided that this is something, you know, is it a measurable, demonstrable problem in your district, the lack of childcare options?
Yeah, definitely. So we have been seeing declining enrollment for the past few years, and that significantly impacts our operating budget. And we are experiencing a budget deficit due to declining enrollment. So we looked at our demographics in our community and realized that we really seem to be missing this critical infrastructure of childcare. It's very hard for families, young families, to relocate to our communities when they can't find affordable, convenient, accessible childcare options. And so our district was forward thinking. We looked at other schools that had modeled this, and we decided that we wanted to bring it to our voters, a 96 capacity childcare center addition that would be hopefully ready to open in November of 2025.
You know, the example that I used a lot as a legislator, people said, well, aren't you worried about, you know, the jobs and jobs that are moving to China? And I said, I'm much more worried at this point about jobs packing up and leaving, say, Loyal for Marshfield, because that's the next big city where things are, or, you know, leaving to go to Ladysmith or Rice Lake. And, you know, Alma Center Humbert, Maryland certainly has that pull from the larger cities in their direction as well. And it would seem to me, based on what I'm hearing, is that if a family in your district can't find childcare and they end up going to a neighboring community to go, you know, for childcare, there's probably not a, you know, not 100%, but not a 0% chance that they just stay and enroll the kid in that district there because that's what they're familiar with.
Right. It's really an inconvenience when you're a parent that has to travel maybe one direction for work, another direction for childcare, and your home. It's hard to make it in our school district if neither of those things are local for you. And we've seen that families are very supportive and interested in enrolling their kids in our school district. We're 22% open enrolled, which is an incredible, staggering number that I don't know if that's the case anywhere else in the state. And so our community at large, beyond the district boundaries, is telling us that, hey, we really like what you're doing here as a school, but for some reason they're not moving here and our in-district enrollment continues to drop. So just trying to remove some of that inconvenience. And at small communities and small school districts, we're all competing for these young families. And if there's something that we can do to set ourselves apart, whether it's a childcare center and, you know, being able to retain and attract quality staff, this is something that that we felt was really important for our community to hear about and have an opportunity to address.
Yeah, or as I call it, really, really pre-K. As school districts are looking at these potential childcare options. Now, as you looked at the potential of constructing one at the elementary school, you also looked into in terms of the cost of it and ways that it could be funded. And you have a very unique, creative approach that involves the federal government and something that's also good for the community. Can you tell us what that idea is?
Yes, when we originally did the design phase and looked at the cost, we knew that this would be a tough ask for our community because the price tag was going to be high, around $5.1 million. Our community has been supportive, but we also know that to go to them with that number would be difficult. So we learned about the FEMA BRIC grant, which is Building Resilient Infrastructures and Communities, which really addresses climate change. And what the FEMA BRIC grant allowed us to do is to submit a proposal that we would include a safe room within the confines of the childcare center that would be accessible to everybody that within the Maryland community. Capacity of 650 people can fit into the safe room. And in the event of a weather-related emergency or a failure of the electrical grid, all sorts of different climate-related issues that could come about, high wind storms, the facility will actually unlock at the moment that the emergency service, siren goes off for anybody that can make it there. And so the FEMA grants, we wrote our application and they selected us for the final review process, which is the biggest hurdle you have to overcome. And we're anticipating up to $3.5 million to go towards the project specifically to fund the safe room structure. And then, of course, we'll have the child care center also a part of that.
Forgive me for going on just a small tangent here, just to tell a quick story. But almost 2 years ago now, there was an immense hailstorm that went through Rice Lake. We know this because Sherry's car was completely totaled by the hailstorm. You can still see the damage on some of the houses. And there was a fair going on at the time. And there was either the sheriff himself or a deputy who was getting everybody to head toward this big, you know, storm shelter. Essentially, I think it was a hockey rink or something like that. And just in case people are hearing this and going, what do you mean they're building one big safe room, one big storm shelter? As you see these stronger storms coming and hail and flash floods, and we've seen tornadoes decimate communities, that it really is forward thinking that FEMA is thinking, okay, for communities that want to build these kinds of structures for use in emergencies, we will help with the funding. And so you've done that work to get you to this point. Now you're asking voters to, you know, do their share and say, okay, help us over the hump here with this referendum coming up in November, right?
Absolutely. So the cost of the ballot question will ask for $2.9 million and approval of either or both of the questions that we have on the ballot will actually not lead to an increase in the mill rate. And that's significantly because of the FEMA grants. You know, in our application to FEMA, it was very important that they know what the primary purpose, I say primary because it's a safe room, but what's the purpose of the building 99.9% of the time? And they really understand small communities, and childcare is a need across the country. And I think that really helped our application stand out in a crowd.
Yeah, you know, like what did you say to Selena? It's like, you know, you're not building a gym, you know, you're not building a fitness center, you know, you're doing this thing that is of value of service to the community. So that's why that referendum is on there. But you also have an operating referendum that's on there as well, correct?
Correct. So the operating referendum is $745,000 non-recurring 4 years. Of that amount, $400,000 is just for the operating expenses. I referenced the, you know, our open enrollment status and our declining enrollment. So we're really relying a lot on our out-of-district enrollment to bolster our budget. But that comes at a bit of a cost. The state formula doesn't fund as high students that open enroll into your district. And so after the ESSER funds, which were the emergency relief funds through COVID, once those sunset last year for us, we have a significant budget deficit. And this $400,000 for the next 4 years is really just going to maintain the services that we already have in place.
Which, as I said at the start of the segment, is it's much more of a commentary on the system overall across the state. And I am no expert on what 49 other states are doing. But as I look at what Wisconsin's been doing since those revenue limits were put in back in 1993 or so, it's not that you couldn't have a system of revenue limits, but then you've got to modify it to keep up with the times. Your state aid has to keep up with inflation and things like that. Or you have to look at a different system entirely. But we don't have either of those things right now. We have what we have. And that's why hundreds of school districts have gone to referendum. You've seen them. You've seen the ones that succeeded. You've seen the ones that have fallen short with the voters. What have you gleaned from all of that? How does that inform the messaging that you're giving to voters there for the referendums that you have coming up in November?
Yeah, we really feel it's just about informing the voters about what the realities of our small school and what the realities of funding in the state of Wisconsin is. This really took a drastic turn back in 2010. And around that time was when the funding changed from the state of Wisconsin and the reliance on local tax dollars. Basically, plan was for schools to have to go to referendum if they wanted to continue to raise their their levies and fund their programs. And since 2010, over 70% of schools have gone to operating referendum. We're one of the few that haven't. That number certainly increased during the spring election cycle, and I'm not sure what it is at now. But we haven't gone to operating expenses. We've been able to try to make it work as best we can. But in the 2021 biennial budget, when we didn't see an increase in spendable dollars, because at that time the theory was that school districts had all these ESSER funds and they could make it work. While that was true for a district like ours, once those funds dried up, the new biennial budget didn't make up for what we had missed out on in the previous biennial budget. And with inflationary costs, it seems that every year, whatever increase that we get is going straight to inflationary costs, insurance and insurance increase costs. So it really doesn't seem like we're ever catching up or getting ahead of where we're at.
So that's what is leading to the operating referendum. And then again, you've got the capital referendum that could lead to the child care center. Obviously, you can hear in my voice how creative I think this is and forward thinking. But what kind of a response were you getting from others in the community or maybe your colleagues around the state when they heard about the approach you're taking to adding a potential child care option?
Yeah, I think everyone understands, especially the small school districts where, you know, you look around and you're trying to figure out, okay, where would a family bring their children for childcare? And there's just really very few licensed childcare providers. And so since then, I was recently at a conference and the number of hands went up for superintendents that are considering a childcare center. I feel there's probably 100 superintendents in the room. It was well over 50%. I think as school districts, we recognize we can only solve so much. But what we do really well, especially in our community, is we raise kids and educate kids. That's what we know how to do. We're not going to be able to go out and build more houses or increase business in the community, but we can build, do something to provide excellent child care and support for families. So that's what we bring to the table. And I'm in a community that has lots of forward thinking village boards. I've met with all of them, and they're all looking at ways to address the other issues that small communities are facing. So I think this is just one piece of the puzzle.
It is, but it's one very creative piece that you're working on there, and I appreciate you joining us to talk about it. Drew Semmingson, superintendent for Alma Center Humbert, Maryland. Thank you so much, Drew. It's good to see you. Good luck with the referendum, and thanks for sharing some time with us.
Yeah, thanks, Pat. Appreciate the opportunity.
You bet. Have a wonderful day. Todd Alba is traveling, so he will not be with us today, so Greg and I will be back to wrap things up on the show in just a minute. This is Up North News Radio, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
This is the final weekend of the Minnesota Renaissance Festival. Don't miss your last chance for adventure. There's hilarious entertainment, delicious food and drink, live armor jousting, and our marketplace is a shopper's dream. Discount tickets available at Cub Foods, Menards, Quick Trip, and Walgreens. This is our closing weekend, so the gates will be open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Get your on-site parking pass and plan your adventure at renaissancefest.com. Only 3 days left this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on. But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be zesty or spicy or sweeter or whatever. If you miss the good old days of great tasting barbecue, we'd like to introduce you to Grandpa's Barbecue. Made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Buy yours online today at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
It is National Monte Cristo Day. It's kind of one of those sandwiches, it's like bell bottoms. You just haven't heard about it in like 40 years. But it got me thinking, what's a sandwich that's totally overrated? I'm going to go first. The Philly cheesesteak.
Really?
Yeah. And I'll tell you why. Because I'm spoiled. Because in Wisconsin, we have the brat packed with tons more taste than a Philly cheesesteak.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Out here in the middle of all these acres, it can feel like you're the only person on earth. And sometimes, that's how it feels when you're going through tough times. Trouble sleeping, your mind racing. So what do? We get help. There are people in our community who are here for us. Sometimes, just talking to someone can make all the difference in the world. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Yeah, one more one-hit wonder from you on this one-hit wonder day. This is a Jigsaw with a song called Sky High. Some of the best of 1975 rock right here on Up North News Radio.
Rock?
1975 wasn't the most rocking year. This is what passed.
Oh, wow. This,
come folks, on, we had Gerald Ford. No?
Sure. Gerald Ford. I just gotta say, folks, if you watch the live stream, you get to, of course, see Pat and my faces we make when we're talking to each other and whatnot. But one thing you don't get to see is me watching the videos that Pat picks. And I get to see the outfits, the hairdos, the general milieu of some of these groups, these acts, these artists. And I really just put it upon you to look up Jigsaw by Sky High and don't settle for anything less than the Pop 75 performance, because oof.
For folks, little background on this. It's like, well, you're a radio station. You play records, right? No, there's not a turntable in that studio, is there? There's no audio files.
There's not even a CD player in here.
No, this is all YouTube, yeah. Which is, you know, again, we're a radio station, we're licensed to play music, but instead of a record, it's off of YouTube. And there's all kinds of, when I'm looking at the links, sometimes it's the video, the traditional video that you'd see. But for older music like this, whoever put it up on YouTube might have put, like, you know, album covers from that group, or maybe superimposed a live appearance on American Bandstand or something. You never really know what you're going to get on some of these YouTube clips when we're looking for music every day. And it brings me joy. It's why one of the things I could do is I could just all go find the lyric videos where you just see the lyrics up on screen to the song. I'm thinking of Greg. when I'm putting that segment together, I'm like, no, we're not giving him lyric videos when we can avoid it. If we can bring a little joy to you through whatever the heck was in that Jigsaw video, it makes me happy.
Something to behold. This guy's had a shiny suit on too, I gotta say.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that, again, 1975. My mom was big into sewing back then and sewed an outfit for me because my aunt was getting married. And so I wore it to the wedding, and then I wore it to my first communion. And again, typical 1975, it's a green polyester leisure suit. It was worthy of Herb Tarlick from WKRP in Cincinnati. And someday I'll dig up the photo and show you. It had kind of a satiny, silky shirt underneath with a bunch of orange and green tiny dots on it.
That suit just screams, I'm ready for the body of Christ.
Right. There was a little bit of news made yesterday on Capitol Hill by Brett Favre, of all folks, who told a congressional committee that he's been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, which I think struck people as odd, given that he was there to talk about his role in a welfare misspending scandal in Mississippi. Now, Favre does not face criminal charges, and he has repaid a little more than $1 million in speaking fees that had been given to him through that misuse of the welfare program in the state. But Favre also talked about being an investor in a biotech company with ties to the welfare case, and the 54-year-old Favre told the committee he lost his investment in the company that he thought was developing a breakthrough concussion drug. He said, as I'm sure you'll understand, while it's too late for me, I've recently been diagnosed with Parkinson's, this is also a cause dear to my heart. And Favre has talked about all the concussions that he suffered. We don't know if there's a connection between concussions and Parkinson's, but it's something that he wanted to mention in his testimony. But I do appreciate that the news coverage, while empathetic toward Favre and his Parkinson's diagnosis, didn't, shirk what a scandal this continues to be down in Mississippi, where, Favre is claiming he didn't know the payments he was getting came from welfare funds. But it was, and I don't have time to get into all of it, but basically Mississippi's Republican governors, plural, looked at the welfare funds that were coming in for it's called Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, or TANF. And they were like, oh no, screw them. And they basically used it as a slush fund for all kinds of projects. Well, the whole reason for this hearing on Capitol Hill yesterday was that House Republicans have said, well, that scandal in Mississippi points to the need for an overhaul in the TANF program. No, it doesn't. It means we need people to stop skimming off of money that's designed to go to needy families. So I'm sympathetic toward Brett Favre, but let's not lose sight of why he was there in the first place.
Yeah, I agree. And honestly, when we the news broke while we were on the air yesterday with Matt and Air on Air, and I have family who have Parkinson's. I understand what people go through. I don't take anything away from his experience, but I also felt like it was a very apt a weird time to bring that up in the moment.
Yes.
And I want him to get the care he can. He's a rich man. He would probably have access to world-class health care, as we all should have access to that kind of health care. But I just felt like I was like, why did you bring that up at that point, in that moment, in that space?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a shame, but I also know that Favre has repeatedly spoken of his, support for conservative causes and things like that. And I'm glad that as the write-ups made note, they also didn't lose sight of what we were there for in the first place. Mm-hmm. And that was the misuse of government funds. What's coming up on Matt and Air on Air 2 short hours from now?
Today we have Joe Sapecki at 10:33. Oh my goodness. And then you'll have him Joe tomorrow. Sapecki? And then you'll have him tomorrow. And
my
then
goodness.
At 11:30, we have Dr. Kristen Lyerly also participating in our new segment, This Shouldn't Be a Thing, which will be at 11:50. And at 11 a.m., Pat, you can check out another keyword for the green or gold text win contest.
Very good. All right. Thank you, sir. Hey, Up North News is the Wisconsin outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. You can follow us on social media. You just look for Up North News WI, and you can sign up for our newsletter on our website, upnorthnewswi.com. Have a great Wednesday. We'll see you tomorrow morning, Up North.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Dom Salvia.
Next time, Matt Rothschild in studio. President Biden addresses the UN General Assembly and Nebraska playing games with the Electoral College. Tune in.
The Dom Salvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6. It's time to go for the green or gold with Civic Media's new Text to Win contest. When you go for the green or gold, you could win $100 cash, gold jewelry, and be entered to win our grand prize, two indoor club-level seats to see the green and gold in Green Bay. Download the free Civic Media app in the Google Play or App Store and get ready to text in for your chance to win in this statewide contest. Get ready to go for the greener gold with your local Civic Media radio station. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. This is the Buzz of the North. WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.